And it is time for another AEW Dynamite review here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show podcast. Welcome. I'm Mr. Warren Hayes. I oversee things here, but, you know, make yourselves at home. You're mi casa, su casa. Come on in. We're going to talk about Dynamite here. AEW Dynamite. Not the explosive. Although, maybe, you know, I could, you know, do something maybe at some point where it's like, yeah, we're going to do the Dynamite review. And then I start talking about, you know, sticks of TNT. Do they even still make those? Like, is that even still a thing? Like the actual sticks of TNT, you know, the cylinders with the wick, not the wick, it's not a wick. Candles have wicks. The fuse. Do they actually still have that? Wick. If I light, I light dynamite in my home to, you know, light up the gloominess of the place. Dad, why is the candle hissing? Oh, it's from New Zealand. I don't know. What? Why do candles from New Zealand hiss, Dad? Oh, it's because they're, you know, they're in the Southern Hemisphere. You know, they have all sorts of weird things down there. You know, when you flush the toilet, you know, it circulates the other way. You know, and their candles hiss. It's May 16, 2024. We are going to be talking about the May 15 edition of Dynamite that happened from the Angel of the Winds Arena. I have never heard a more inspiring name for a live venue, a sports arena, than Angel of the Winds Arena in Everett, Washington. Isn't that just the most uplifting thing? You know, you've got, you know, the United Center. You know, you have the KFC Arena. You got the, you know, the Bell Center. You know, the Coca-Cola Arena, Scotiabank Center. All things where you're like, okay, but here you got Angel of the Winds Arena. What is Angel of the Winds exactly? Like, are they a sponsor? Or is it just like an arena that has never gotten a? No, it's a thing. It's a what? Hang on, Angel of the Winds Arena. And there is a Angel of the Winds Casino Resort that is in Washington. I am not going to try to pronounce where that is. I am not even that. I'd have to rehearse first. But so is that related? Is the Angel of the Winds Arena related to the Angel of the Winds Casino Resort? Is they're both in the state of Washington? Oh, they have the same logo. Okay, so the Angel of the Winds Casino Resort and the Angel of the Winds Arena, they both have the same logo. So then that settles that. They are related. But honestly, I can't pronounce I'm going to try. Stoliquamish. There's probably like a very regional way to pronounce it that doesn't make me that where, you know, where they can differentiate, you know, between normal people and people like me. Stoliquamish. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's not so bad. On Stoliquamish Lane. And yet the Angel of the Angel of the Winds arena is in Everett. I don't know how far that is. Look, we'll do a deep dive. on this on another occasion. Right now, we're going to try and get to the review. Of Dynamite. I'm realizing that I'm in a bit of an odd spot right now with AEW. Cause last night, I'll tell you, and I don't want to sound like I'm coming across as a curmudgeon, or you know that I'm gonna bum you out. Cause I liked last night's episode of Dynamite. I thought it was good. There was a lot of stuff to like. I think we're short of a great show, but listen. But the idea here is that I'm thinking before starting Dynamite, I'm catching up on stuff and I'm watching some CMLL. I'm watching last Friday's CMLL show. And I'm three matches deep. And you know, it's like a quarter to eight. And I'm like, oh, I shouldn't start another match. You know, I should, you know, get ready for Dynamite, you know, kind of thing. And the thought crossed my mind. I was like, what if I don't watch Dynamite tonight? What if I just keep watching CMLL? What if I, you know, keep watching, you know, the Best of Super Juniors? What if I do that? And it legitimately crossed my mind and I was a little surprised. I was like, oh, wait a minute. This usually doesn't happen. I'm sharing this information that with you so that maybe at some point I'll point back to it. Now, I ended up watching Dynamite. And like I said, I liked last night's Dynamite. And I still really like AEW, right? But what is it? What's going on these days where I don't feel that electricity right now? That I don't feel that, you know, the crackling that I felt watching Collision, for instance, this week. Collision was tremendous, but time to watch Dynamite. Okay. And my thought process is I could be watching something else right now. So is that like, I feel like it's some kind of subconscious reaction, you know? I'm just like, I can't pinpoint, I can't put my finger on it specifically, you know, where I'm like, but I, you know, where are the great Dynamites? Where are they? Where are these great top to bottom shows? Because this was a good show, pretty good show. I enjoyed it, but you know, I saw 10 out of 10 great show. And it took me aback for a second. Because I didn't think this was a great show at all. I think it was a good show, pretty good show, very good show. But a great one. Saw people clamoring for it. 10 out of 10. We're not watching the same thing, I don't think. If last night's show you thought was great. Like, where are they? You know, I think... Where are the great Dynamites? Because the great Dynamites have happened. This is what I'm trying to say. The great Dynamites have happened, and I think people are just... Their short-term memory is taking over. Because if you compare this to the really great Dynamites that we've had, this is fine. It's good, but it's not a great one. I don't think. Anyway, don't want to... I feel like I'm splitting hairs, and there's probably some of you that disagree with me. But I honestly think that and no disrespect intended, if we're, you know, just sharing opinions and debating, and feel free to share opinions and debate in the comments. If you thought this was an all-timer, this is what we're talking. We're talking a 10 out of 10 show, an all-timer, then you and I are not watching the same type of wrestling. We're not we're not looking for the same things. I thought it was a good show. Very good. Great? No. We'll get into those reasons why as we start talking about this show, which had 3,459 tickets distributed for a setup of 4,076. I feel like the Pacific Northwest is a better wrestling environment than this. But these are very normal, average AEW numbers. Show starts with, right off the bat, with the Blackpool Combat Club duo of Brian Danielson and IWGP World Heavyweight Champion Jon Moxley taking on IWGP... It's New Japan... Jesus Christ, what's wrong with me? NJPW World Title Champion Jeff Cobb and Kyle Fletcher, who is still the Ring of Honor Tag Television Champion, isn't he? And it starts with a cold open on Mox backstage. And we're going for it. Music. We're just going right into it. Now I'm going to tell you, I'm sitting here to... Yeah, I'm sitting here, I've got a little beverage, and I'm all set up, and the show starts like this, cold open, right to Mox, music hits, guys are in the ring, Jeff Cobb and Kyle Fletcher are in the ring, I'm rubbing my hands, I'm going, oh, this is a show meant for me, this one's for me. I'm suddenly thankful that I didn't succumb to the dark side and decide to skip Dynamite to continue watching CMLL. Not that CMLL is on the dark side, Liz. You know what I mean. And so we get that. Moxley hits the ring, or at least he tries, but Jeff Cobb and Kyle Fletcher go after him. Now, Jeff Cobb, in case you're wondering, you know, you didn't watch up the lead into this and like, what the fuck is Jeff Cobb doing on TV? Well, Jeff Cobb was called in by Don Callis to take out Mox, because right now the Don Callis family is without their muscle, right? Powerhouse Hobbs was injured, so he's going to be out for a while. And they're without muscle. So they're like, well, I need muscle. So I'm going to call in a favor. I'm going to reach out to my old contacts in Nuge, Shin Nihon. And we're going to do this. So that's why Jeff Cobb is here. They being the heels here, they beat up Mox. Tremendous. Just beat him down until Bryan Danielson's music hits and he runs out to even the odds. So he comes in and he starts beating up Fletcher, beating up Cobb, giving Mox time to breathe, to recuperate so that Mox can get in on the fight. And they're brawling all over the ring and Danielson's music is on loop and the audience is going fucking bonkers because they're in the shadows of Seattle, Washington. So... you know, and that's, you know, Danielson's stomping ground. So everyone's going bonkers for this, but they're going bonkers for Mox. Like the whole thing is just, I'm sitting there and going, there you go. There you go. This is what makes Dynamite special. This is the kind of stuff that the other guys don't do. This is what, and it's exciting and it's good and it's visceral and I'm enjoying it. And the music is playing on loop. And this is just like chaos. And then they finally hit the Danielson's still in his entrance gear. Like he's, you know, fighting the dudes off with his jacket. You know, it's all great. It's fantastic stuff. It's a great way to open the match. A match which I really liked. I thought it was a very, very good match. Look, crowd is into it. Everyone's working hard. Kyle Fletcher, of course, looks spectacular in this. And he's pulling big moves. He's doing Michinoku drivers and spinning tombstones. And it's just tremendous. You're just sitting there going, this is absolutely fantastic. What a way to start the show. Fuck your 7-minute opening promos. You know, fuck recaps. Let's just go for it. Like, this is what we're tuning in for. You know, And yeah, like I said, it's something that the other guys don't do. When is the last time you saw a WWE match start like this? I'll tell you, you haven't. You haven't seen WWE open a show like this. They just don't. They got their formula. They got their thing. That's ultimately, you know, Tony likes to call himself the Pepsi Cola, the challenger brand. He likes to do things differently. We'll do fucking things differently because we're going to talk about things that you didn't do differently from the other guys. We're going to talk about it. You did it last night, Tony. That's a signature. Look, when's the last? Was it the anarchy at the arena 2 years ago when Moxley's theme was on loop? And that was just, it was phenomenal. Look, if AEW wants to do this like once a year, once in a fucking blue moon, you can't start doing this too often or it loses its cachet. You do this once a year, once every 18 months, where just the music like continues to loop during the fight. It's like, it's tremendous. Of course, it has to be the right music. You know, you do that Brody King's music, fucking rule. You know what I mean? Like, but you know, Dan Garcia's maybe. No, Dan Garcia's wouldn't be so bad. A Private Party would get to me though. That would just grind my gears. Anyway, after the very good match, I give it 3.75 star. After the match, Kanistic Takeshi, why am I stuttering? What is this? I was able to pronounce the city of the all the Angel of the Winds casino resort, which I don't remember. It's already gone from memory. I was able to pronounce that and I can't pronounce Kanistic Takeshi. Jesus Christ, Warren. He runs in and hits a German suplex on Mox. And then the boys, the heels join in and they beat up on Danielson and Mox until Claudio Castagnoli hits the ring with a pry bar for the save. Good stuff, good angle at the end. You know, all the, is he still even in the Blackpool Combat Club? What is there? Are they still friends? Is it still a thing? Look. You got all three guys in the ring. They're fine. You know, it's like, and again, maybe it's because, you know, because I watch, you know, New Japan and my vision of a faction or stable is much different than what we're used to in North America. So, you know, sometimes factions, they just go off and they do their things and you know, they just do their things. They're not always like hanging out, doing things together as a group. And it actually happens very seldom aside from heel groups and, you know, well, LIJ, but that's a whole other thing. My point here being that if Blackpool Combat Club, if the guys are all off on their different tangents doing their own things, that's fine. People think Claudio is absolutely turning because he disapproves of what Danielson is doing these days. He can disapprove without there suddenly being like this tremendous wedge. Now, I'm not saying that he wouldn't turn. I think it would be strange for Claudio to jump out of Blackpool Combat Club. And I think it would be weird to terminate the faction, period, because I think they're tremendous. They're a tremendous group. And they've been at the epicenter of some of the best things that AEW has done, even in their worst moments, even in the company's worst moments. The BCC was always there to just elevate everything and make you and remind you that you're watching AEW, if that makes sense. So I don't see any issues with this. You know, Claudio is like, okay, I'll let Danielson do his thing and I'll walk to the back. I think that's fine. I'm not reading too much into it. Or yeah, and maybe that's the plan too. Maybe I'll have egg on my face. I'm not saying he's not going to turn. I'm just saying, I don't see these as signs necessarily. I see this as a group of guys. Just like, they have each other's backs and interests, but they can also be like, oh, I'm signing out on this, right? Let's move on. Good, very, very good opening match. A great angle. I'm into it. Of course, you always wonder in these types of situations, like, why is Kanesuke Takeshita the mid-card jobber guy? Because if he's getting set up to fight, I don't know, Moxley or Danielson or whatever, he's being set up to lose. Like, it's going to be another TV thing. And listen, can you imagine the discourse? As bad as the discourse was with the Powerhouse Hobbs Moxley match, imagine with Takeshita, you know, a guy who is associated with DDT wrestling in Japan as opposed to New Japan. Like, it's, what a disaster of a situation if that happens. Not going to lie. We get a package for Christian Cage and Swerve Strickland and everything that happened with the Mogul Embassy attacking them. Of course, yeah, here's another little bit of the discourse here that, you know, last week when Swerve got jumped by the Mogul Embassy, you know, there were comments going around that Swerve looks like a geek because he was jumped by three Ring of Honor guys. With the assumption that Ring of Honor is like the secondary brand where, you know, so on and so forth. You understand what I mean? Whereas, you know, the guy was jumped by three huge dudes. You know, it's like, what would have been, like, I feel this would have been a situation that, that if the opposite had happened, if Swerve had fought off the Mogul Embassy, then the same people would have probably said, well, he fought off three huge dudes all by himself. That doesn't make sense, right? So he basically, so, but the concept here is that the floor here to this bit of commentary that I'm making is, people thought it was weird and thought it was beneath Swerve to get beat up by three Ring of Honor guys. And I was like, I don't know. What did I say last week? I was like, I got to let this go. I got to see where they're going to go with this. I had other issues. I had other issues than Swerve getting beat up by three Ring of Honor guys to talk about on that, in that segment and overall. Last Saturday on Collision, was it Collision or was it Rampage? Like, they're all sort of melting together. Now, Rampage is sort of it sort of melds into wherever it's going, right? It's like the Super Scroll of AEW programming. It just goes, you know, sucks up whatever other show it's on and it's following and that's it, you know? On Collision, you had Swerve basically destroy the Gates of Agony, right? And then we'll talk about it later. But then he gets his win on Brian Cage. So, you know, I'm like, just give it a minute, let it breathe a bit. There you go. Yeah, the guy's coming back. He's fighting back, and he's getting his. The heels are getting their comeuppance very soon, very quickly, because Swerve is the champ. And on an even playing field, it's great. This was not it was an uneven playing field. I don't even know what issues people had with this, outside of the fact that they were just upset that it was Ring of Honor guys. Like, and that somehow this was under him. I don't understand. Adam Copeland comes out to make his entrance, but he gets blindsided by the House of Black, who beat him up, drag him to the ring. There's a blackout in the ring. Malakai Black is there. He gets a microphone. He asks Buddy Matthews to take Copeland's wedding ring while Brody chokes him out. which is great, you know, because Copeland is like fighting, but the Brody's like, no, all right. Brody puts him in a sleeper. And Copeland is like, whoa. He does the things, like, just like he'd sell in a match. I thought that was nice. And Malakai pockets the ring. Kyle O'Reilly comes in to make the save before, as the House of Black are setting up chairs to sort of do their triangle attack thing, you know, on the corners, and they're setting up chairs to do it and whatnot. But Kyle O'Reilly tries in, runs in to try and save him, but it doesn't quite work out. He eats a black mass in the face, and then they do the thing with Copeland, who is left in the ring hurting. Good little angle. Of course, this is all setting up a match which I'm legitimately excited to see. Adam Copeland in a barbed wire steel cage match in 2024 sounds absolutely delightful. And those are words I did not expect to hear come out of my mouth. Really, no way. But here we are. You would have told me this last year or in 2020, Warren, in 4 years from now, you're going to be excited for Adam Copeland matches. I don't believe you. And then the guy, see, that's the thing. If you go back in time and you start telling yourselves things that that have been happening recently, right? You go back in time in 2020 and you tell me you'll be excited for Adam Copeland matches in a couple of years. I don't believe you. And then I also said, and by the way, buy some GameStop stock, because there's going to be a thing and you're going to become rich. I don't believe you. Like, you see, like, you tell your past self these things from your future and you wouldn't believe them. You would not believe them. Eddie Kingston apparently is legitimately injured. He got hurt at Resurgence. It looks like the suplex spot through the table onto the floor. Apparently that, you know, it was an ugly bump. We talked about it this week on the podcast. You should check it out. But it was a rough landing, cool spot, rough landing, but apparently he is legitimately injured because they are taking him out of the Anarchy in the Arena match. The Elite are there to talk about it, say, it'll have to be a handicap match or forfeit. And Okada tonight says he's going to destroy. He says, Dax Harwood, I'm going to destroy you, bitch. I swear, Okada is, I keep putting him over. It's redundant audio at this point. We'll just say another great Okada outing and we'll get excited when he really does something spectacular next. FTR backstage with Renee. They said they found the fourth person. First he's got to go through Okada, and it's not nice to call people names. That leads us to the Young Bucks successfully retaining the AEW World Tag Team. No, it was an eliminator match, right? It was an eliminator match, but they won their tag team eliminator match against Christopher Daniels and Matt Sydal. Jack Perry's there on commentary. I thought this was fine. Good, solid tag team match, but nothing that resonated where I'm like, oh, this is just absolutely tremendous. You know, the Jacksons just basically overwhelm, Daniels and Sydal. And who have some comebacks, but the Bucks wrestled like champions here. Fine little match. You know, this was all set up because Christopher Daniels was, he was standing up to the Bucks. Well, after the match, the Bucks cut a promo as they're going back up on the ramp. And, you know, they say, you know, you shouldn't have done that. You should have, you should have been nice to us. You should know better than being oppositional to the to your executives. And they say, we're trying to clean the locker room of toxicity. And you're trying to screw things up. This is all a big goof, right? Like backstage, when Tony and the Jacksons are putting this stuff together, they're like, you know, we. This is all a bit. It's what it is. They go, we love you. People are going to get what you're saying. It's fine. It's absolutely fine. Anyway, they fire Christopher Daniels. That wasn't a very kind or gentle firing. But they, you know, they're going to give him a sweet ass severance package that'll last him 30 days. and they even arranged an escort for him to, you know, security to walk him out the building immediately. And then Jack Perry then dumps his woo energy drink on Tony Schiavone, who just lets it happen. And when Perry leaves, just Tony just delivers a son of a bitch. It's like, I swear, like, the best way to get heat in this company is to bully Tony Schiavone. Tony Storm is backstage with her group. She says her maternal instincts are kicking in. Because of what people have been doing to Mariah May. And she tells Harley Cameron that she's going to beat her up. Has a couple of good lines. And I'm going to tell you, I thought this was funny. She had this one really good line about being like a Las Vegas degenerate. I'm paraphrasing. Because she was talking about being a Las Vegas degenerate, how you're going to end up being with your ass up in the air, with an ass full of face, flat on your back with an ass full of face, wondering what happened to your dignity. Which is really funny. And you'll notice that Tony Storm was not in black and white. And they're not doing the goofy over the top stuff, and they're letting Tony Storm start. Tony Storm is wrestling again, and not like, you know, doing, you know, entertainment matches. She's wrestling. She's back to doing what she does best, and you know, this version of timeless Tony Storm is, I think, it's pretty funny. I enjoyed that promo. What do you want from me? Back then to the review, moving on, Malakai Black. Malakai Black has Adam Copeland's wedding ring, and I think he's talking to it. I think he's like, you know, he's saying nice things about it to it. Anyway. He accepts the barbed wire cage match or whatever. Hook squashes local guy Sebastian Wolf, a Taz Plex and the Taz Mission for the win. They've red rum. After the match, Hook grabs a microphone and I go like this. I'm like, oh no. But he does a non-disastrous job on it. I think I'm not saying he was suddenly comfortable, that, you know, we're suddenly seeing a renaissance of Hook on the mic. But what he was all throughout this promo, this little segment they had here, I should say, he felt comfortable. Like they're throwing him out there with the microphone, the live crowds, to make sure that he, because they want him to improve. They want him to get on a certain level, right? So, you know, he says, I wasn't here for this doofus or whatever, you know. Doesn't say doofus. I said doofus. Says he's here for Chris Jericho and his FTW championship. His being his hooks, not his Chris Jericho's. So Jericho arrives with Big Bill. He says he hopes, Jericho says that he hopes Hook learned a lesson after hitting himself in the face with a baseball bat. And he's here to share, he's glad, he's here to share the spotlight. Hook says there's no, he's not here to share. He wants all the spotlight. And he wants Jericho for the FTW championship tonight. Jericho says this isn't a fighting moment. It's a teaching moment. And Hook needs to be less selfish and think of others like Chris Jericho does. Jericho is leaning into every piece of criticism he's getting online. It's tremendous. I just make them matter. Like, the audience was chanting, please retire. And he addressed that. He said, I'm not ready to retire. I've still got lots to give. Fantastic. So, he being Jericho sets up a qualifier on Collision. Was it Collision? At least this Saturday to potentially earn a shot later. Hook says that great. Yeah, that's great. Walks up to him and bonks him on the head with the microphone. Now, the mic shot didn't look very savage, especially since it caused Jericho to bleed. Like, I don't think he actually opened his head up. I think he used a packet or something. If he did bleed, then the shot looked stronger than it was, like if he was open hard way. But anyway, a schmoz ensues. Shibata comes in for the save. Yeah, it's a fine segment. The Jericho stuff these days is I enjoy it. And I know, look, we've been over this so many multiple times, and I know there's a lot of people that by default will not watch it, and it's a shame because I think it's pretty good. Swerve Strickland is backstage. He cuts a promo just before hitting to the ring about the Mogul Embassy, and he's, so on and so forth. And then we get the match. Swerve versus Brian Cage, which I thought was very, very good. I thought it was another very, very good match. And it starts out, look, Swerve is mad at him. So when Cage hits the ring, he goes, the champ goes straight for him, right? And there's this great spot, you know, that where Brian Cage catches Swerve, who's diving to the floor, and he catches him in a suplex position, like right in the suplex position, right? It's just tremendous stuff. Brian Cage, man, like 12 months ago, people were like, oh, he wants to leave, let him leave, hit the bricks, pal. What a tremendous asset this guy has been for AEW, for his position on the card. Now, I don't think we're ever going to see main event Brian Cage. I don't think so. But for what they need him to be and do, he has been flawless. It's tremendous. Anyway, Brian Cage manhandles Strickland, but the crowd is loud and behind Strickland, of course. Swerve came up in Defy, and weren't there even Defy wrestling chants, I think? You know, so he's in his playground. Cage plays the hits, does all of his big moves. Great stalling suplex by Swerve Strickland, and a tremendous final stretch where Strickland gets the win with the house call. So you see, here's another thing. Don't wonder, he didn't need to pull out the JML driver to finish him. He didn't need to pull off his submission finisher. Brian Cage's role position in the totem pole, I guess, is very clear. He got finished off with the house call, which is a move that we have seen Strickland use on other top guys and is unable to put them away. Lower mid-card guys, Strickland puts them away with the house call, like Cage. So again, we know where Cage's position is on the show, and what he does is tremendous. He is such a good part of this roster because you need guys like Cage to do what Cage did last night. That was good. I thought this was very... I gave this 3.75 stars. By the way, the Bucks and Daniel Seidel, I gave it 3 stars. I forgot to mention it. We get a new thing. A new show on the TBS YouTube channel. Meal in a Match. Instead of dinner in a movie, you get Meal in a Match. Hosted by Renee Paquette and RJ City. So that's a new thing. I'm going to give that a whirl. Let's see. I want to see what the concept is. They seem to be watching old AEW matches while having food. Look, Renee, RJ, I want to tell you something. I am very good at watching wrestling and eating. So... I am a willing guest. If you ever want someone to watch wrestling while eating, I'm your guy. I am very good at that. I would say I have techniques down. You know, because I also take notes in the mid. Like I'm your guy. Hook and Shibata have a thing backstage where it's like, you know, I think what ended up happening here is that they're setting up this eliminator, right? And that Jericho was talking about, and Shibata's going to be in it because Hook says, I want to fight Chris Jericho, but Shibata's like, well, I want to fight him too. So I think they're going to be in this eliminator thing. And then Samoa Joe arrives and he says, it's sad because if Hook stopped playing himself, he might actually be dangerous. He put him over. He said, look, I like you, but right now, you know, what are you doing, kid? I kind of like that. And Shibata on his translator says Samoa Joe is too large to wear florals. Floral patterns on his shirt. That was funny. That's an RJ City line, if I ever heard one. Anyway, I'm not quite sure what this was all about, but we'll see. Just move on. Tony Storm defeated Harley Cameron in a non-title match. I thought this was pretty good. I gave this 3.25 star. I thought this was, good. Quite good. So glad that Tony Storm is back wrestling. She's doing what she does best. And, that's why we all love Tony Storm in the first place. That's why we were pissed off with the pie in the face back in WWE. That's why we were excited when she joined AEW. It's for this kind of shit. You know, I'm glad she's expanding herself and, you know, doing the silent movie. It's not even a silent movie thing. The gimmick, you know, the Timeless Tony stuff. Good. And you know what? Like she's committed to it. She's good. She's convincing. That doesn't strike me in the right places, but I can appreciate that the work she's putting in is viable. She's good at it. But I'm thrilled that they're starting to create some kind of balance out of the Timeless Tony and the wrestling, right? And more importantly, I think the real bit of analysis we have to give here is that Harley Cameron's pretty good, isn't she? You know, Harley Cameron, who I thought was, you know, insufferable in the QTV stuff. God, do you remember QTV? God, I hated that. I hated it so much. I did not like that in the slightest. And Harley graded me. Then they brought John Morrison on board. And I was like, what are we even doing here? Boy, what a misstep for Powerhouse Hobbs. Anyway, we'll have our... We'll do an entire episode on QTV at some point. We won't. But Harley, when she wrestled Mariah May last week, and I'm on the review and I said it back then, I said, I thought that was going to be a complete disaster, but it did not turn out to be a complete disaster. So I'm like, huh, lightning in a bottle maybe, but good for her. So now she comes back this week against Toni Storm and she has another good match. She's fine. She's an absolutely capable, good little pro wrestler that, you know, I don't know if you want to invest more time into her, you want to give her bigger spots. I'd be curious now to see how far she's able to go, because she's had two good matches in a row where I'm like, yeah, this is actually very good. She's got the energy down. She's always positioned well. She's her delivery's good. Her selling's good. I'm on the Harley Cameron train right now. Has it pulled out of the station yet? Not yet. I reserve. You can tell it's starting to chug. The train is starting to chug. I reserve the right to jump right back out at the same station. You know, if the train keeps going at this pace and you know. But right now, I got nothing. I'm surprised. I'm surprised. Pleasantly surprised. I like pleasant surprises. Oh, and Serena Deeb hung out at the top of the stage as well. And boy. You want to talk about... Want to talk about presents and... Anyway. Look, let's move on. I can't... I don't want to overstay my welcome here today. Will Ospreay and Roderick Strong have their face-to-face backstage. And look, this was tremendous. This was a highlight of this show. Where they're being interviewed, they're doing their face-to-face. Rod is there with the Undisputed Kingdom. Will Ospreay is there all alone. And boy, does it go. And Ospreay, again, masterful work, passionate, real, intense, calls the guys bellends. That's the only like jokey joke part of it, because then he says he hates how comfortable Roderick Strong is, you know, there with all your goons, because they'll make a move if I wrap my hands around your neck. And he, you know, and he's saying, you know, maybe you're feeling all comfy because you've had neck issues, and I retired the Tiger Driver 91. And I've done it to people I love and people I respect, but I don't respect you, Rod. Saying, you know, you mocked me basically when I was on the come up, right? Strong says, sure. I don't respect you for being so talented in the ring. I don't respect you because you're a dummy outside of it. Which is a reputation that Will had. Or still has. I don't know. He said, it's not because you have a girlfriend and a kid and a mortgage or whatever that suddenly you're this paragon of respect. No. He doesn't care what anyone else thinks about Will Ospreay. Roderick Strong knows who he is. You're a coward, a fraud, and a child. And Will is getting fired up. And he says, this is going to be for all the years you were burying me to Ring of Honor guys back in the day. We're working stiff. I'm like, look, I would not be surprised if Roderick Strong did that, but I wouldn't be shocked. There were lots of people who did not care for the Will Ospreay style back in the day. You know this. I know this. Everyone knows this. Will has improved. Will has become a fantastic wrestler. He's always had the, you know, you, oh, look, we're not reiterating all of this right now. I got to pump the brakes a little bit here. The point being that this felt real. This felt good. And with this one promo, I am now excited for the international title match. Now I'm like, all right, this is going to rock. Now I'm into it. Now this feels real. Now this is just two guys who don't fucking like each other. There won't be shaking hands at the end. They won't be hugging each other. One guy, the winner lifting the arm of the loser. There's going to be none of that shit. God, this rules. God, pro wrestling is so good when you have the good elements. And then we flip over to the complete opposite. The contract signing. Now, my loathing of contract signings is legendary and has been going on for years, all the way back to my days at Fightful, where I've always called it out as for what it is. An uninteresting, rote piece of cut and paste creative for people who are out of ideas. We have to do something. Let's do a contract signing. I have always had a profound disdain for them. And people all the time, but Warren, this one here in AEW wasn't so bad. And this one, and there are things I will always acquiesce, you know, like Hangman Page, you know, signing in blood and all that stuff. Or Kenny signing his contract in Hangman Page's blood, right? That one. That fucking ruled. No. But then when you get to contract signings, you know, WWE does them in a way which is so formulaic, you can see them coming, you pull out your bingo card and you can fill it up because they do them practically every time. It's they hit all the notes every single time. And as much as there are always like little things in AEW contract signings where I was like, well, this was fun. This one here was a cookie cutter. One for one WWE contract signing. The champion says it, they come in both. They have the chairs and the tables, right? The champion cuts their promo. The challenger cuts their promo. They get up in their business. There's a blow that's thrown and someone goes through the table. Like, it is the most basic, uninteresting shit. And I love Willow and I love Mercedes. Don't get me wrong, but this was boring and uninteresting and rote, to reuse the same word. Rote. Remember what I said at the start of the show? Kicking off your show with a cold open, Jon Moxley coming in and having this wild brawl outside the ring as entrance music plays on loop. That's different. That's something that the other company does not do and that you can latch onto and say, well, that fucking ruled because this is different. I'm watching something else and it's well done and it's different and it's good. This was pinpoint to the very last, element, a WWE contract signing. The kind of shit that I can't stand, that I've seen millions of times and adds nothing. This added nothing. What did it add to the show? I'll tell you what was added. Mercedes Moné exhibiting clear heel signs. Now that I'm excited about. That I'm happy about. But you know how well she could have exhibited heel tendencies? By having a match. I still don't know why we're locking Mercedes down. We've locked her down since March and keeping her from doing what she does best, which is wrestling. We didn't even do that with Kazuchika Okada. We didn't even do that with Kenny Omega. Fuck, we didn't even do it with Bryan Danielson back in the day. Why are we hanging on to this one? So, at the very least, they're reading the room. They see that Mercedes is maybe not getting the babyface pops that they were expecting. So, we're going to pivot. Maybe this was the plan all along too, which I hope it was. Regardless, because Mercedes is best as a heel. She will always be best as a heel. So if it did anything, it gave us that. But you could have done this in so many different ways. Then just a fucking paint by numbers contract signing. This stunk. And Willow, look, Willow is over. She's super over. I am wondering if Tony Khan really does realize how over this woman is with AEW fans. In arenas, in discussions online, show me someone who outright goes, bleh, Willow Nightingale. Who is in good faith, of course. You know, not an outright, you know, everything that AEW does is disgusting kind of hater, right? I'm talking someone who has the gumption, right, to say that kind of stuff. Show me. Willow is, she has been a value to this guy. She is earning her stripes week after week. She has worked. She has grown. She has grown, created her connection to the audience. Like, when you want to talk about stars that AEW has made, we can add Willow Nightingale to this pile. But Tony's got his, you know, his Porsche or his Mercedes in Mercedes Moné. How about that? And you know, he's going to flash her around and put her up top. And that's fine with the amount of money that she's costing. You have to do that too. But Willow is not even, it's not even a consolation prize. She is a great ambassador for AEW. She's a great staple of this women's division. She should be wrangling up there at the top, doing top things, because she's over, period. Period, period. Every time this woman gets involved into shit, people are into it. It's the same thing with Chris Statlander. Sometimes it's weird the focus that is put on other women, on certain women in the division, when there are quality assured wrestlers like Willow, like Statlander, who are there, and especially Statlander has to be chomping at the bit at this point. They haven't been doing shit with her. You know what I mean? Anyway, let's move on from this segment. Go to the main event. Kazuchika Okada defeated Dax Harwood. I thought this match was good. It was good little match that underdelivered, if that makes sense. I think that a lot of people, look, it was the main event to start with, and I think a lot of people were expecting more, especially after Dax's most recent outing against Tom Billington, the Dynamite Kid, on Saturday on Collision. If you haven't watched it, you absolutely have to, because it's a tremendous pro wrestling match. So a lot of us were rubbing our hands together and go, oh yeah, you know, we got Dax fired up. Dax is great. We got Kazuchika Okada, one of the all-time greats, Let's see what kind of magic can happen here. And there wasn't really magic. Yeah, they worked hard. Okada's ate the chops. His chest was red. They're dropping each other with huge moves. But you could feel it in the audience where at some point they're like, okay, something's going to happen, right? When's the shift into the next gear? When's the big move? When's the big turning point going to happen? And we were all, you could feel it that they're like, oh, is it now? Is it now? And it never really got there. Harwood does a top rope superplex, Tombstone. There's some great drama. Don't get me wrong. Sharpshooter. But Okada gets out. And he gets out really quickly too. You know, as in he's scrambling to escape. And Okada uses the ropes as the ref is distracted to crotch Dax. And he uses a Rainmaker for the win. It was a fine match, but it underdelivered. It was, you know, there were moments I thought were a little rough. I'm like, oh, there's something happening. It didn't quite gel, you know? No overt botches, nothing like a match falling apart. That's not what I'm saying, but you could tell there were some things that were a little on the rough side. I'm like, man, I really wanted to like this match. Like, I really fucking wanted to like this match. I'm sure a lot of people did too. I'm sure a lot of people in that audience did too. So, yeah. Three and a half? I don't know. Like, it was good. Fine. But I expected more, especially on a Dynamite that had so many matches, right? I was like, you know, especially compared to the two other big time matches that we had, the opener and Swerve versus Cage, which were tremendous. After the match, the Elite all hit the ring to beat down Dax. Cash Wheeler comes in to make the save. Danielson comes in to make the save, but there's no really save. They're overwhelmed because they're one guy down. But then Darby Allin shows up from under the ring, and he's got a skateboard, and he takes down the Elite, and he's the fourth guy. A guy who was, you know, he had a broken whatever the fuck. Was it his ankle? A leg? I don't remember. There's so many things wrong with Darby Allin. You know, just got hit by a bus. It's fine. No, let's go in and wrestle. So he apparently is the fourth guy to join the Anarchy in the arena. Now, I've seen a lot of people upset that he's coming back and he's not going after Jay White, who in kayfabe is the guy who took him out. So apparently he's very mad at that. People are very mad at that because it's like, well, no story continuity, right? I understand. Now, what if Darby Allin cuts a promo next week and says, Jay White, I haven't forgotten about you, but I got to handle this first because whatever reason. You know, he and Jack Perry kind of had issues, you know. Didn't they have issues or, you know, the pillars and whatnot and all that pillar stuff. I don't remember. That was kind of a weird moment in AEW's story history right there, that four pillar feud. You remember that? But I can understand that people are upset, but at the same time I'm like, look, we're having Anarchy in the Arena, Eddie's out. You have to throw in someone who's insane and is going to be who is not going to have any issues, you know, doing dangerous stuff and screwing his body over and, you know, all of that. You're going to have to. Darby, I'm excited at the idea of Darby Allin in an Anarchy in the Arena match. What are you talking about? You know what's going to happen. He's not even properly cleared as a... I'll tell you one thing when it comes to being cleared, medically cleared and whatnot. And, you know, a lot of people get upset. They make suppositions. And if pro wrestling companies were just more open with the injury status of their talent, instead of being all cloak and dagger, instead of things being learned by backstage leaks and whatnot, by people talking about it to, you know, The Observer and PW Insider and Fightful. Well, then, if they were much more outright with it, we wouldn't be having these discussions. Or then the discussion might just shift to, oh, well, AEW clears everyone, right? So look, I can't speak to this. I can only put this in the faith of those who are in the decision-making, who are in decision-making situations or positions, to tell me, sure, Darby's going to be wrestling because he's cleared to wrestle. And I can only go like, yeah, well, there you go. Because, yeah, he cut his promo after and he said that after the match went off, after the show went off the air, and he said, you know, I was sitting under the ring and a beam hit me on the head and it almost knocked me out, you know, or something to that effect. So people are like, oh, Darby's nuts. So if Darby is cleared to go, Darby in an Anarchy in the Arena match is a net positive. And he'll get his feud with Jay White. That's going to happen. That's fine. He's not coming straight after Jay White. Maybe Jay White will mention it. You know, it's like, hey, Darby, you're back. Nice to see you. Well, it's fine. I don't necessarily have a problem with this. And you know what? It kind of makes sense in Darby Allin's, you know, chaos-inducing aura. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to fight Jay White, but I'm also going to do this over here because it's cool shit to do because I'll be able to throw myself, you know. I don't know. It doesn't come across as that big a deal to me. It does. And the match is still there. The feud is still there. Look, Eddie got kicked. You know, I'm the booker of this company, and a guy just got injured on a show for another company, and I have to throw someone in here who's going to be able to deal with the insanity that is an Anarchy in the Arena match. Oh, Darby, are you okay? Are we good to go? I can't say I'd do anything different, right? The brother's got a pay-per-view to sell here. Tony. It's not doing great numbers at the gate. I think Vegas is burned for them for a while. It's not a hot ticket commodity right now. Anyway, we'll leave it at that for now on this Dynamite. Which, look, overall, we got lots of wrestling. Angles advancing, stuff happening. A very good, you know, a good show. I guess I would have liked the, you know, one really great match on this. I don't think we got a great match. I think we got really good matches. Very good matches. I think the main event sort of missing the mark. It brings it down a little for me. But give me these types of Dynamites every week where it's just stuff happening. We're going in hard with matches. That's what I want out of pro wrestling. I don't think I'm asking for too much. I don't think so. So, very good. Good episode. I enjoyed it. I'll take this every week, honestly. Don't get me wrong. I'll take this every week. I'll take very good episodes like this every week as opposed to one great one every 4 months or whatever, you know? And then the rest is sort of... It's good. I liked it. I can't... You know, I don't want to give the impression that I'm down on it. I'm not. I thought it was very good. Anyway. We'll be done for now. Thank you, everyone, for listening, watching. Hey, can I bother you for a like or a subscription here on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes or a 5-star rating on Spotify or 5-star review on Apple Podcasts? That would be tremendous if you could. I appreciate you a great deal. Thank you for watching, and I'll see you next time.